This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
And we've got on the phone right now one of our favourites.
Who have we got, David?
Who is it, Neil?
We've got Ali McGregor here to talk to us.
Hey.
It's been quite a while since we've talked to Ali, but Ali has been a regular with us for some time now, talking all things cabaret and, you know, things happening in Melbourne, basically. Yeah. Hi, welcome to the show, Ali.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's our pleasure.
I can't remember the last time I spoke to you, but then what is time?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. And what year is it? Is the big thing?
Who can say?
Hey, we've got to start off that a little birdie told me, and I think it was you, that it's actually your birthday tomorrow. So happy birthday for tomorrow.
Thank you very much.
21st, big occasion.
Again. My auntie used to say she was 21 every time I asked her, and for years I couldn't work out why she was still 21. And yes, I think I'm at about that same age.
Right, okay.
She was telling everyone she was 21, but it's weird though, because I do feel like I've aged about 15 years in the past 18 months. So,
Hey, what is somebody, with so many projects on the hop, what are you doing right now? You know, like must be soul destroying for Ali McGregor right now.
Oh, look, you win some, you lose some, you know, in some ways. Things are really tough, you know, the arts community are doing it really tough, but in other ways, my family are all healthy and my kids are actually keeping pretty well. They've been able to make connections with their friends and, you know, I've tried to see the positive in all of it. I think last year I was really busy and got lots of stuff happening. Work-wise, this year I found a little bit more difficult to sort of get that motivation and, you know, pivoting and all of that sort of stuff. But I've been lucky enough this year to get a couple of seasons of Lorelei, our wonderful opera.
Yes.
We did a return season at the Palais in June, and before that we got to go to Brisbane with Opera Queensland. So in between those lockdowns, I've had a couple of little things, and I had Comedy Festival this year.
That's right.
You know, look, it hasn't all been that bad. It hasn't all been. And, you know, as someone pointed out to me, you know, you can complain about all the work you've lost, but then, you know, what a joy to actually have work to have lost it, you know. So it'll come back, and as I said, the main thing is my family are all healthy, and that's the most important thing. That's what we're all doing this for, isn't it?
Good, excellent. Yes, of course. Now, have I heard that you're doing something with the Queensland Opera again?
Maybe. I don't know where you heard that.
Oh, you can't say anything yet, can you? Oh, okay.
Trust David to let the camera go.
There is certainly some great, a wonderful news coming up for my company, Fluxus, which is just about creating new work for the Australian stage, opera stage. We've got a really exciting project coming up. I'm really passionate about that because I think right now when we've got a national company that, like next year, Opera Australia have programmed a lot of fantastic classical opera, not one new work, and most of the principal singers are from overseas. And I think right now the opera industry needs us to support it. And with Fluxus, we're all about using Australian creatives and actually, you know, creating new work with stories that really resonate to an Australian, a really diverse Australian audience right now. So I'm excited about that project, and as soon as we can get up and running, I'm going to be, you know, trying to get lots of work happening.
Right, and that's what you did, here in St Kilda, before we went into lockdown, is that you are introducing a new piece where you were involving, you know, like you're not writing it, someone else is writing it, it's your concept, your idea. Explain to people what it was, because it's such a great story, and the costumes alone were spectacular as well.
Fantastic. Well, the piece you're referring to is Lorelei, which I mentioned before. We did it with Victorian Opera, and it was a huge success. We did it in 2018 and managed to bring it back, as I said, for for a quick little season at the Palais this year. It's based on the myth of the Lorelei, which some people may be familiar, German folklore myth. Very similar in sense to the sirens or even to a certain degree mermaids.
Mm.
It's this idea that sort of runs through various sections of mythology and literature of these women who sing the sailors to their death. And it kind of goes with a lot of literature where the beauty and the sexuality of women are blamed for men's failings. And, you know, we see it happen, you know, quite often. And of course, it's not the sailors who went off course. It was this, you know, beautiful woman singing. It was her fault. But it was interesting because when we looked at the myth, it comes down to this beautiful woman who was waiting for her long lost lover or whatever to come back from the sea, and she refused the hand of marriage of anyone else in the town. And she was very beautiful, and her beauty was driving all these men to distraction. And the bishop said, "Well, this can't be done. She's driving all these men crazy. We'll have to put her in a convent." And then on the way to the convent, she hops out to look for her lover across on the Rhine, on the Lorelei Rock, and she either jumps off or falls to her death. And then after that, people used to see this ghost of this beautiful Lorelei singing, and it would crash. It happens to be a very treacherous piece of ocean. I'm not sure if she had anything to do with it, but
yeah.
We just wanted to explore this myth and the way in which, you know, women in a lot of literature were never really given much agency. Their beauty was, you know, brought down governments. I mean, we see it all the time. And in opera, you barely make it out alive as a woman, you know. But the main women in opera, you know, die, get raped. I don't know, like, you name it. It's a smorgasbord of tragedy.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We kind of just wanted to look at that, I guess. So the idea was these three Lorelei in their little box, and they're just about to sing their song, and so these sailors will die. And then they just one day they decide not to sing the song and see what happens. And in this case, the ship crashes anyway, and they sort of think, well, what on earth were we doing all this time if the ship would have crashed anyway?
Anyway.
It wasn't even up.
Yeah, well, exactly.
And Marg Horwell did the costumes, and they were based on what she had seen. I mean, people get dressed up for the Met Gala, and you see these dresses that you just you love, but there's a part of you thinking, how do they go to the toilet? You know, these dresses that are just fantastic, but just completely nonsensical, and you can't imagine anyone actually doing anything human or physical in them.
Yeah.
And so as we start to take our own agency, we start ripping pieces off this dress so that we can actually breathe and move around the stage. So
yeah.
And Sarah Giles, who directed it, really got this great sort of feminist aspect to it. And the weird thing was, is when we first started writing it, the Me Too movement started online, and just coincidentally.
Brilliant.
And we found ourselves really having a lot of discussions in the rehearsal room about all of that and about, you know, generally female agency and how not much has changed. And then when we were in Brisbane, the week of performance up there was the week that the Brittany Higgins story broke and everything was going off in Australian government. And yet again, it felt, and so audiences were coming going, did you write this, like, for this very week? You know, it really felt like, and great Grace Kane's speech that she did at the press club, there were a couple of lines someone sent to me that could have been pulled exactly from our libretto, shoulders back and persevere, tell our story loud and clear. And it's been kind of extraordinary. Every time we do it, something happens to make it seem totally relevant.
So,
and that, unfortunately, I think it will continue to be relevant for some time.
True. But, Ali, you know, like, you came up with the concept, and then you had a team around you that moved with you. But why that particular piece that, and some of the others that you've told me about that you're in the works for future collaborations, where did it come from? Why did you pick that particular piece?
Look, the Lorelei myth had been something that had just piqued my interest from when I was at college. When I was at music college, a lot of Lieder, and Lieder is German song that was Schubert, Hugo Wolf, Schumann, all the shushes. they wrote a lot of music based on poems, and there was a very famous Goethe poem and a Heine poem, both on the Loreline myth. And so there was a few songs I had heard about the, and it, as I said, piqued my interest. And then when I was doing opera burlesque years ago, which was a show I did, I think we first did it in 2005 or 2006 with Dimity Shepherd and Antoinette Halloran. After that, we had a bit of success with that show. And afterwards, I thought, well, maybe we should do a cabaret exploring all these Lorelei songs and songs that had already been written. And there was things like Song to the Siren, Tim Buckley. There was Ella Fitzgerald did a song about Lorelei. And I thought there was quite a lot of music that had already been written about sirens and Lorelei. So I was going to create a cabaret show about it. And that, for one reason or another, never happened. And then but it just sort of stayed in the back of my mind. And then I heard the Julian Langdon's music, who is a composer, at a concert. And I thought, oh, I love this music. Oh, and then I don't know why, but that idea came into my head, and I thought, well, why don't we just write a new piece exploring this idea? And then I went to Casey Bonetto and Julian Cosgrove, both comedy writers, and I think my talent is as a curator, and I think I know talent when I see it, and I'm also very good at walking away and letting people do their job. I'm not a writer.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think I know a good idea. She's an ideas man. And I have this idea, and then I can put that team and then just go, fantastic, I'm leaving it with you, and walk away. And yeah. I did that with Lorelei, and it paid dividends, I think. Just trusting, just knowing that you're going to hire people who are very good at their job and trusting them to do it and not micromanage too much. And for the other stories that I'm working on, sometimes I hear a podcast, hear someone's story, and that just really resonates with me and feels operatic. I think as well, opera, I don't think you can just put anything into an opera. It has to feel operatic. W.H. Auden, there was a great quote from him where he said, opera cannot be sensible because people do not sing when they are feeling sensible. And I think operatic, the sound you make when you're singing opera, it's such a guttural, whole body sound. And there's only certain times in your life where that sound is, there's no other sound that will that will work in that situation. I think opera, it doesn't always have to be tragedy. It can be, you know, high farce. But there are certain stories, I think, that just speak to me as an opera. And there's a piece I'm working on about an African-Australian woman who...
I love this concept.
...in the last century.
Yeah.
She was an amazing woman, a singer, second-generation Australian. And you know, a lot of people don't know how many African immigrants we've had for years, not just recently, you know, in Gold Rush and before in the First Fleet there were, and there were whalers. There's a lot of our history that, you know, we just don't seem to explore that much, but she was a fascinating character and her name was Elsie Williams. And she when I heard about her death, which was in the Dudley Flats, which was the West Melbourne swamps, which is kind of where the, Costco is really in the Melbourne Eye right now, right, that kind of West Melbourne area.
It's still a wasteland, still a wasteland.
It's still a wasteland, yeah. It's just you can buy 48 rolls of toilet paper at once now, you know. But and I heard about her death. She was a singer, but she was wailing, lying on this smouldering rubbish heap, and everyone else in the flat didn't know if she was singing or she was dying, and someone had laid corrugated iron over her so that the feral dogs wouldn't get to her.
Oh gosh.
And she lay dying, and I just thought that I then needed to know more about her life, and for me that the end of her life was truly operatic, and I wanted to know more, and her story is extraordinary. She was a singer. She was actually cast in the first Showboat in Melbourne, and even though one of the leads is an African American, and she was African, she wasn't cast in it. They cast a white woman and blacked her up.
Right.
And she, you know, never quite got her big break.
Yeah.
That men, alcohol, mental illness, various things stood in her way. But she was an extraordinary woman. She made extraordinary connections, and there are first-hand stories and really interesting things about her life. And other really interesting characters who were living in the West Melbourne swamp. really sort of that melting pot of migrant cultures.
Yep.
Depression era Melbourne, yep. And it's just a part of Melbourne's history.
Yeah.
I'm super interested in.
I can't wait for you to do something with that. It's if you want to hear more about Ali's amazing mind, you can go to The Art Hunter on YouTube and watch the full length interview, which goes for 15 minutes that I did with her. But as on the edited version is on Channel 31 tomorrow on her birthday at 5:30 on your birthday. And so 5:30 tomorrow on Channel 31, Ali McGregor's Art Hunter interview, or you can see the long form on YouTube. Ali, always.
And as you can see, I can't stop talking, and I've been in lockdown, and I'm just with my two children. My husband's in London. I don't get to talk to any adult humans, so you know I can't stop talking, and that's what our conversation was like. It was so exciting.
It was good.
It was brilliant.
Hey,
the stories of the Playboy mansion.
Exactly. I got the lot. All right, Ali McGregor, have a wonderful day tomorrow on your birthday, and people, don't forget to watch the show on Channel 31 tomorrow at 5:30.
Oh, thank you so much for letting me talk at you.
See you, Ali.
Have a great day. Bye.
Thank you very much. We've been talking to Ali McGregor here on Joy 94.9 Sunday Arts Magazine.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.